Welcome to The Bridge, Your Health, Your Voice, the official podcast for the University of Maryland, Baltimore School of Pharmacy Patients Program. The Patients Program is the bridge between the community and researchers. The Patients Program created this partnership to help researchers listen to the community's voice in order to build a bridge to an effective learning healthcare community. Here's your host, Rodney Elliott.
We have an exciting guest on today. She is new to the Patients Program team, but not necessarily new to the team. I know you're probably thinking like, what is he talking about? What do you mean new, but not new? So we'll get into that a little bit later in our conversation. But today we have an opportunity to chit chat and talk to Paris Barnes, who is our new senior training specialist here at the Patients Program. And the reason why I say she's new to the team, but not new to the team is because she's been here at university. She's actually been here on the 12th floor where we work at, and she's actually still in the same office, just a change in her title. And we'll get into, her new role here at the Patients Program, what brought her to the Patients Program, and we'll also tap into little things, some other things that she does out of the office that also contributes to our work here at the Patients Program. Paris, how are you?
I'm good today. I'm hanging in there. How about you?
I'm hanging in there as well, right? And it's funny you mention that because the way our office is set up, your office, for folks who's listening and even viewing, her office is right next to the community room or the little small cafeteria. Everybody has their lunch, go get a little water, etc. And if you walk on the outside of the office, you might hear a little tune every now and then, and you know where you need to think about where it's coming from. It's coming from Paris's office. As a matter of fact, she even has a sign outside that says, "Hey, I like to work with music. Don't worry about it. It's not going to do if you need anything." Paris, where did your love for music come from? And like, how did that come about that you really want people to like know that about you and embrace that?
This is such a fun question. So I have a family history of music. So my uncle Mike Squirrel was a DJ back in the day, and his son was actually a DJ for 92Q. His name was Squirrel Wide, and they used to make me my own club mixes. So I had my own club mix at like 5, and it was called This Is Paris. It was mine. I wish I could still find it, but I had my own club mix. So that's kind of where my love of music came from. They used to play me stuff all the time. My grandma used to play me vinyl records of Parliament and Funkadelic. So I'm really an old school music kind of girl. So all day you'll probably hear me playing some oldies, or maybe a podcast. I'm not really into the new music just because it's just not as interesting. So
I appreciate that. For me, I love music as well. And I read something a while ago where it said music is the only thing you cannot control from entering into your spirit. And for me, for sure, when I want to get pumped up, I listen to a music. If I'm going to the gym or if I want to like kind of relax on a nice drive, something I'll put in something that's relaxing. So music is definitely soothing. And I'm glad you brought that here to us here at the Patients Program. But let's get right into it and talk about your role as the senior training specialist here at the Patients Program. Talk to us a little bit about what are some of your goals in this new position, and then how do those goals align with the Patients Program mission when it comes to patient-centered outcomes?
Okay, so let me start off by saying the team that is here is already doing an amazing job. So all I'm doing is sprinkling a little bit of glitter on top of what they already have that is amazing. So my goals here are just to add to the excellence and to make sure that we do things that accommodate all people. So one of the things that I brought over was making sure that every document that we create is remediated. So we want to make sure that it's readable by a screen reader or someone who has a visual impairment, the colors aren't bothering them. So we already have a really good team. We already have an excellent product. But what I wanted to do was kind of enhance it and make sure that whatever we do, we take it to the next level and that we're doing all things in excellence.
Sprinkle a little glitter. I like that. I like that approach, right? And I get it. I understand it because, again, you're adding to what we're already doing here. And when you're talking about readable information and the Patients Program, we pride ourselves on disseminating information back to the community and back to all, obviously, our researchers. So You know, what are some of the innovative approaches or strategies that you hope to bring to the patient's program to enhance that training? You already talked about, I can't pronounce that word you just mentioned,
remediate.
Like, tell us a little bit more about exactly what that is and what are some other tools that you plan on bringing to the patient's program.
Okay. So the process of remediating a document means that we are putting it into a system and we're testing it to see if the document is considered accessible. So are my images labeled with alternate text or is my text readable at all? And when we put those documents into a system, if it spits back out to us that it is not right, then we have to go in and manually fix it so that it is right. So we use a system to actually go in and manually make sure that all the data and information on the sheets is readable by a screen reader. And then after that, we save it, download it, and then I test it. So I have screen readers on my computers anywhere I work, and I actually test the screen readers to see if the screen reader is reading it back to me the way it's supposed to. So it's kind of funny. I have a health communications background, and so a lot of my work that I do is always going to be integrated with marketing and communications. It does not matter where I go. I am always going to do marketing and communications in all things because it's important. We can't disseminate if people don't get it. So,
oh, you're right about that. And our community will let us know for sure. I've been handed back information or handed back slides or even told that that won't work for my community. But I love when a light bulb does pop off in some of our researchers or folks we work with when they're creating these documents, whether they hear from someone on the staff like yourself or even some of our community members about the importance of putting it in the language they understand. But now when you're talking about understanding different fonts and it's readable and different colors, that's taking it to the next level. So I'm sure some of the documents that I've seen you produce already are fantastic. I even have a couple ideas that I'm kind of stashed on the side. And when your workload kind of lessens a little bit, I might slide something your way to help us or help you promote for the Patients Program podcast when we're out and about in the community. Talk to me a little bit about your role prior to joining the Patients Program, because I hinted to our audience and our listeners that, again, you're new to the program, but not new to the program. What made you want to, bring your talents over, so to speak, to the Patients Program?
Sure. So before I was at the Patients Program, I was still here on the same floor working for the same department, just a different team. So I worked for the Behavioral Health Resources and Technical Assistance team as the health communications program specialist. And what I did there was I took some data, some things about substance use prevention, overdoses, all those kinds of things that happen. And I take the data, I read all of it, and then I give you back something that's easy for you to read. So maybe I'm reading a 25-page report, but then by the time you see it, it's a one-page infographic. So that's what I did there. And we did it for the entire state. So any county in the state that needed some resources, they were able to reach out to us and I created them. So I'm very proud of that work. And the reason why I wanted to transition over to the patients team was because there is a training element in the new role that I have. So it's no fun to know how to do stuff if you can't help other people do it too. Like, it's just in our culture, ain't no fun if the homies can't have none. So we have to be able to bring our friends on and the community on with everything that we do. So it's not fun to know how to do health communication and dissemination and train and giving other people information if they can't do it too. I want everybody to come up. So I wanted to come to this team to be able to train members in the community and connect them to resources that they can use, disseminate, and know how to share.
I love that, Paris. I appreciate that for sure. And that's definitely going to be an added bonus to the work that we do here in the Patients Program, because when I'm out and about the community in my role, whether I'm at a health fair, back to school event, and I'm handing out information, sometimes some people may take something and I coin it as a nickname of a Frisbee. They'll take it, look at it, and all of a sudden just, boom, sling it away. But then there's an opportunity where some folks will look at something and they really get it and they really understand it and they'll take it home. And not only will they take a deeper dive with it, but they'll also share it with their community. So I'm pretty sure some of the products that you're going to be producing are going to be great for us internally, but also externally. You guys, I'm talking to Paris Barnes. She's the new senior training specialist here at the Patients Program. And throughout our first couple minutes of our conversation, you can kind of get the tone, understanding that she is a helpful person. right? She wants to help people. She's a volunteer. And not only have we recognized her abilities and brought her onto the team here, the Patience Program, other folks out and about here in the community in Baltimore have done the same. Paris, talk to us about your new role on the Opioid Restitution Advisory Board. I saw something online, then I saw something, on social media, then I saw something in university campus page, and I was like, oh, man, like Paris has really been rocking and rolling, and now she has a new role. Talk to us a little bit about that, and, you know, how do you envision your involvement making an impact on that team?
That role is a blessing. So it's funny. I randomly saw that they were asking people to apply for the advisory board on LinkedIn. And at the time I was working with the other team and I was like, we should all apply. So all of us applied, but there were different tracks to how you apply. So you can apply as a social worker or prevention specialist or lived experience. So I applied under the lived experience umbrella because for my entire life, I witnessed my biological father struggle with substances my entire life. So that role is a blessing because I am someone who firsthand was affected by watching someone have a substance use disorder. Therefore, I have a different standpoint than maybe someone who doesn't. So I'm a bit more invested in the cause and I'm a bit more invested in the solution than somebody else who does not have their firsthand experience.
Stay right there for a little bit, Paris. And when we're talking about your lived experiences, that is another terminology that we use here in the Patience Program a lot, particularly when we're talking about our community members. When I'm out and about in the community and I'm asking someone in West Baltimore about their interest in participating in research, maybe a focus group, a town hall seminar, I always stress to them, or make sure they understand that their input is important. And you're talking about the whole gamut of research. And I let them know that the researcher and the doctor that we work with the letters that's all behind their name, PhD, all that, that's great. They had their practice in that. They study for that. But you have your lived experiences as well. Tell us a little bit more about why lived experiences are important, not only in your role on this advisory board, but also maybe you can talk a little bit about how it's important here in the Patience Program where we're involving some of our community members.
I think lived experience allows us to have a different layer of empathy that others may not have. So academically, we could all be smart. We can read articles. We can do papers. We can know the data, and that's fine. But having lived experience gives us an additional layer of empathy to whatever we're connected to. So we can feel it different. And when we can feel it different, then we can affect it different. So again, of course, the research is there. That's fine. But because we have been through that experience, we know the nuances that maybe the research has not identified.
If you feel it different, you can empathize different. Like, that just makes all the sense in the world. And again, I'm talking about that light bulb, right? When a light bulb pops off or pops in front of, imagine that light bulb pops off in someone's head when they're in a focus group. That kind of lets me know that we got it. They understand now. They understand that they have a seat at the table and their information, their input is so, so valuable. So thank you for sharing that for sure. And I know you'll excel in that role on the advisory board, bringing that lived experience to that and also here the Patience Program in your role. I'll throw this nickname out here. Won't you tell me a little bit about where it came from and you know what it means to you? The Quiet Giant. Who is the Quiet Giant, Paris?
So I'm not somebody who likes to be in the front. I'm not typically somebody who's like, look at me. I don't want to make a speech. I just want to do what I do and do it well. And the people will see the results. So a lot of the times my family's like, you did that? You did that? Oh my God, you did that? How did you do that? And I'm like, I just did it because I knew it had to be done. I did what our people needed. I did what the community needed. I did it because it was just something that had to be done in general. So I don't ever want to be someone who's in the forefront. So the Quiet Giant came because I'm actually a really short girl, but I am quiet. I'm going to move in silence like lasagna. And then I'm going to pop out and it's going to be done. And then I'm going to move on to the next thing. But people are for some reason think it is ultra amazing, the stuff that
I do. And I'm just like, I just want to see better for our people. So I'm going to do what it takes to see better for our people in our community.
For folks who's listening, and whether you're listening or you're viewing this on YouTube or Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcast, listen to The Bridge, if you can tell me what artist dropped the line, "Move in silence like lasagna," because I know what Paris just did right there. She dropped something. If you can tell me what artist she got that line from, you have a patience program power pack coming from me. Drop that in the comment section or send me an email and you got it. Quiet Giant, nickname from your family, totally understandable. And that was another award that, again, as I'm researching and doing work, that you received the UOB Community Service Award, which is given to someone who's recognized for her sizable volunteer efforts to people facing barriers in Carroll County and beyond. Again, that talks a little bit about doing something that needs to be done. How did it feel receiving that award and being recognized for the work that you did, but also from your colleagues and from your peers?
It was a blessing. You know, I'm a Baltimore City resident. I've lived in Baltimore my whole life. So whenever the call was made to step outside of Baltimore and to step into Carroll County to help out, it was intimidating because I said, look, I don't know how what we're going to do is going to be received, but we're going to try it and we'll see what happens.
Yep.
So we tried it and we saw what happened and it worked and the kids loved it. So we just kept rolling with it because the data said it needed to be done, but we just didn't really see where the product was happening. So it was a blessing. I was 100% not prepared to win that award, although I'm grateful for winning it. Again, I'm somebody that just wants to do better for people, and I want people to have the opportunity to see that there are people out here who care about you, and we care about what happens to you beyond just the regular nuances of life. So it was exciting. I'm grateful for it. And I think that just winning that in itself and people reading that article really will shed light on the fact that there is a need for people to help out in Carroll County, Maryland. It's often not thought of, but I think just reading that article will shed light on the fact that Carroll County still needs our help. We're still in Maryland. It's only about 20 minutes from Baltimore. Carroll County still needs help.
Well, I'll tell you what, I've been here at UMB for about over 7 years, and if it's me not tuning into the newsletter or seeing an email, they do a good job of giving people their flowers, so to speak, for the work that we do here at UMB across all the schools, but particularly here at School of Pharmacy and the Patients Program. So I'm pretty sure the way you're coming into the Patients Program, you're coming into this new job, there might be more opportunities for folks to, quote unquote, give you your flowers. Again, you know, a quiet giant that doesn't like to be in the limelight. I totally get it. I totally understand that. I'm a little bit different from a standpoint. I kind of can't avoid it a little bit. I'm not short. I am tall, so I am out there. But I do understand not needing the accolades or not needing the pat on the back, because there's a bunch of times I've been out and about in the community and found ways to impact someone who I may be engaging with at a health fair. And it could be research related or it could not be research related, because let's face it, a lot of the work that we do, particularly here at the Patients Program, is research related. But then there are other issues or challenges that our community are dealing with and going through. And if I can be a bridge to that, yeah, I'm all for it. So I have definitely connected folks to other resources out and about in the community that can help them along their way or help them along their journey to mitigate some of those barriers that they do come up against. Yeah. Paris, we're almost out here. I know you wanted to do this podcast. You were a little skeptical, a little bit of that whole, who am I? Why should I do this? If you're listening for the first 20 minutes, you probably can understand why we wanted to do this, why we wanted to shine a little light or give her flowers. Last but not least, let's talk about you receiving the Minority Cannabis Business Association annual membership, right? Which influences professional efforts and raises awareness about cannabis, particularly in terms of access to resources, networking, and advocacy opportunities. How important was that for you, and what are your plans with that?
So that scholarship was awarded by UMB as well. UMB has a program called Umbrella, and it is a women's mentorship program. So that scholarship was awarded by this institution as well. And when I applied for that scholarship, I was in my last year of the master's in medical cannabis program, and I was trying to find organizations that aligned with why I started studying medical cannabis in the first place. So once I got that scholarship, I was connected to a network of different people within the cannabis industry that did many different things. But the goal of that was to be able to connect with individuals whose idea was to work directly with the community on medical cannabis advocacy and education. So that's what I did with it. And I'm still connecting with those people, and I'm still very heavy in the plant medicine community and things like that, because I think that we, as consumers of medication and things that are good for our health, we should have choices to how we wish to treat anything we have.
Have choices, have a seat at the table, have a piece of the pie, however you want to word it. I totally get it and understand it. And when we're talking about being innovative in this space of medical cannabis, I'm pretty sure there's some research being done. This haven't come across the patient's program table yet, but in the event that it does, do you think it could be beneficial to some of the folks that we engage with? And if so, what specific initiatives or outreach efforts would you think would have an impact when it comes to the medical cannabis?
Oh, yeah. I see that medical cannabis 100% has a place within the patient's program or any program in general. The patient's program works for patient-centered outcomes. So if that patient has an outcome that medical cannabis could potentially be able to help, then we would be doing a disservice not to connect them to the resource that they could utilize to make the choice of their own. So I 100% could see in the future this being a part of our program. Mm. And there are resources and organizations that do rally and get behind the idea of medical cannabis. So Americans for Safe Access is an organization that is going to help individuals navigate how to kind of go around the medical cannabis system and how to advocate for how they wish to treat themselves with medication. So there, to be honest, there is not a ton of medical cannabis research, but that doesn't mean that there won't be soon. So,
yeah. And I'm glad that we have someone on our staff, someone on our team who would be ready in the event that that does come, because we have got inquiries from folks, not about medical, not about cannabis, but about different other projects and different other sectors. So having someone on team that's excited about working with that, for me, it's great. I love it. I love the work that we do here. And I'm glad that Paris is on our team now. She's still friends with the other colleagues as well. Again, she's in the same floor, same office, but it's good to have her with us now as well. Paris, before we get out of here, I live in Rosedale, which is about 30 minutes, depending on traffic, maybe 35. And I'm planning on not taking the tunnel home today, which means I probably got about 45 minutes to cruise to go home. Give me an artist, an R&B artist I can listen to on the way home today that'll kind of just get me in the mood to have and enjoy a good dinner.
This is not a hard question. Christopher Maurice Brown is always going to be the artist. Chris Brown is who you're going to listen to. 45 minutes straight through those skips. If he's not your cup of tea, then we are the beehive over here. Beyonce is always ready and available for you.
Chris Brown and Beyonce are in my repertoire. I haven't listened to Chris Brown in a while, so I'll just throw him on Essentials and I can just maybe listen to a couple tracks of Chris Brown going home, and I truly appreciate that. But more than anything, I appreciate this conversation, Paris. Thank you again for joining us today on The Bridge. We truly appreciate it, and I will see you later.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to The Bridge. Your health, your voice. To learn more about the Patients Program, visit our website at www.patients.umaryland.edu.